Thanks for listening to this message from the life of St. Bees. We're a church that loves to empower, equip and inspire. And in order to better fulfill this call, we're currently undertaking an audacious church relocation project. Find out more, including how you can take part, at www.goandgrow.london. Thank you, and may this message better help you to live a life full of adventurous faith.
So I must admit, when I got the email to preach this summer, I didn't want to. I was adamant that I wasn't going to do it. In fact, I had brunch with some friends who do go to this church, and I was like, oh, I've got the email. They're like, oh, that's brilliant. I was like, no, it's not. I was like, I don't think it's what I want to do. They're like, why? And I was like, well, it's about encounters in the gospel, and it's like, people that Jesus met and encountered him. They're like, oh, that sounds great. I said, I don't really want to. And they were like, why? And I was like, oh, I'm not feeling it this summer. Not feeling it. I sound like one of my kids. But I was like, no, I don't want to do it. And the Lord got on my case, and unfortunately I have a 20-minute drive to work every morning. So if God wants to speak, he has 20 minutes where I can't really get out the car. So I was in the car and I was like, oh God, I don't want to preach. And he's like, oh no, I think you should. And we had a little bit of an argument. And then the reason we argued was because I knew what passage he wanted me to speak on. So I was like, okay, God, well, I'll preach, but I don't want to preach on the passage of the woman healed with bleeding. And God was like, no, we're not negotiating. I was like, oh, for goodness sake. And so I typed the email, shut my eyes to press send. I don't know why shutting my eyes was going to help or hinder me, but we did. And I should probably explain why, because it is a little bit of a niche passage and quite an unusual one. And I was kind of praying that Colin would email back and say, Emma, no, you're not going to preach on that one. I was like, no email ever came. And he was like, actually, I think it's a really good idea. I was like, of course you would. The reason I preach about it is actually this is the first Bible story I ever learned as a child. Yes, I know, it's a little bit of an odd one to start with. And the reason is, to my family, this passage is one passage that we pray together and we always read together. And it has been a passage that has journeyed with us in our life. So I'm very blessed. I have a great family. They are really cute and they are lovely. And we have three siblings. So there's myself, Simon and Philip. And Philip was born with a disability, and it was about 32 years ago. Now, I obviously wasn't alive then. I'm the youngest and best looking one out of the children. But 32 years ago, disability was dealt with in a really horrific way in many ways. And Philip was born, and he wasn't born in many ways the most beautiful of babies. He had a cleft palate, and he was quite profoundly disabled. And he was born, and Mum and Dad looked and were like, oh, this is going to be a challenge. And the doctor said to my parents, do you know what? Just lock him up. Just put him in an institution, forget about him, and move on. And Mum and Dad looked at each other and were like, nah, they have not come across the Westbury's before. So Mum and Dad took him home, and they were incredible. You know, it took them 4 hours to feed Philip, and as soon as they finish one feed, they start another. And my parents are of great faith, and they are inspirational in their faith. And Mum saw an advert to go to a prayer meeting, and she was like to my dad, oh, do you want to come along? And Dad was like, no. He was like, "That you can do that, I'll look after Phil." That wasn't his type of faith experience. And Mum went, and the person was preaching on this passage. And Mum went in desperation. She didn't know what she was going to do with Philip. She had Simon already. She'd been told that she couldn't have any more children, because if she did, they would be disabled, and why would you want two disabled children? And she went to this meeting, and this person said to her, in this passage, the woman never knew what to ask of Jesus, because she did not speak. But she reached out her hand, and Jesus met her where she was. Jesus knew what she needed, and she was sustained, healed, and restored. And Mum came back. She shared that with Dad. She shared it with Simon, who was cute and four. And she shared it with Phil. And every day, we had battles. Every day, we still have battles, especially now Philip is not here. But every day, that woman's story reminds me that all we need to do to encounter Jesus is to reach out our hands and to touch him. And if we do that, we are healed and restored. So when you look at encounters in the gospel, they happen all the time. And when we look at this encounter and we read it, often people read it and think this woman was a coward because she didn't even speak to Jesus. She was a bit sneaky. She went behind him. She didn't go in front of him. She went behind. We might see that she was a coward. But actually, tonight I want to share the idea that this woman was a woman of great faith and a woman of tremendous courage. Because in her encounter, she faced a fear. But she also did not allow her fear to control her. We might have fears in our life. I am terrified of spiders. I'm also terrified of turbulence on an aeroplane. But I don't let that stop me. If I see a spider, well, I try not to kill it because then there's blood everywhere. But I will try and remove it. I got one of those spider catchers. I'm scared of turbulence on an aeroplane, but that doesn't mean that I don't go on them. But this woman's fear was far greater than my fear of spiders and of turbulence on an aeroplane. And what this encounter does tonight is to show us that courage doesn't come from the people this world calls brave or strong. It doesn't come from the people who talk about what they've achieved or what they can do. It comes from a woman who was isolated, who was rejected, who was humiliated, who was alone. But she had courage much greater than any of the disciples. She had courage much greater than you or I, because in her weakness, she did not fear Jesus. In her weakness, she reached out to him. She had courage that allowed faith to exist without words. She responded without fear. So I'm going to invite Glenda up to do our Bible reading for us.
And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately, her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized the power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? You see, the people crowding against you, his disciples answered, and yet you ask, who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering.
It's short and sweet, so if you got bored, I apologise, but it's quite a good one. So, her story. What do we know? What we know is that the encounters in the gospel, Jesus meets all types of people. He meets the sick, he meets the dead and raises them on occasion. He meets the religious and the self-righteous. He meets the good, the bad, and the ugly, the last, the least, and the lost. He meets them in places of darkness and pain and shines his light by his very presence. Jesus' presence in the Gospels is significant. Whenever Jesus is around, something happens. Sometimes it's a miracle, sometimes it's a parable. Sometimes his presence commands a response, as in this case. And this encounter with the woman is something that actually even the gospel writers kind of give a hard time to. Because this woman, we don't know much about. She remains nameless. She's just known as a woman. Now, I am a woman. And if I was just ever recorded in the Bible as a woman, I would probably be a bit annoyed. But I mean, she's done quite well. She has got her story there. But she's known just as a woman. She's not even known by name. Which isn't a surprise in that culture where women were not equal to men, and especially a sick and disabled woman. She is defined by her condition, something that defines her. She is seen as insignificant. She actually isn't even given her own section in the gospel. She is sandwiched into the healing of Jairus' daughter. Jesus didn't even actually intend to heal her. Jesus doesn't even go out looking for her. She goes out looking for Jesus. So this woman who is on the periphery, who is alone, seeks out to find Jesus, seeks out to find the person who can heal her. And I think when we look at this woman, we often forget that she was in a crowd. We know, Mark tells us, that she had been suffering from this complaint for 12 years. So before this complaint hit her, we can only assume that she had a normal life, that she had friends, that she had family. She might have even had a social life. She might have had a job. She might have had a husband. She may have had children. We're not given her story. But what we do know is that something occurred that changed her life completely. And when we look at this story, I wonder if we ever see her determination. 12 years. That's a really long time. I can't even remember what I was doing 12 years ago. I don't even remember how old I was. I had to count backwards and that was just too much effort. But I don't even really remember what I ate for breakfast yesterday. So I can't remember what I was doing 12 years ago. But this woman for 12 years went in search of people that could help her. Now, I don't like going to the doctors because I'm scared of needles. I don't go to doctors very often. But she went to doctors and she spent all that she had in complete desperation. Now, we're really blessed with the NHS. It does great work. And yes, we might have uncomfortable procedures, but I dread to think what they tried out on her. And in her desperation, she never gave up. And I think one of the reasons we have this passage as a family is because we went to every single doctor you could find. I mean, we travelled around the UK looking for people that could help Philip. Never quite worked. But yeah, I mean, she did it for 12 years. She was going well. It is exhausting. But she did it. And then she heard of this man, Jesus. We're not told if she'd ever met Jesus before. I'm going to assume that maybe word had spread about this man who could heal and who was coming to town. And she gets up, must have been in excruciating pain, and decides to go and find Jesus. Not knowing what Jesus looked like. It's not like nowadays where you can, you know, Facebook check in, here I am with Jesus by, you know, the temple. No, she had to really try that out. I love it. Like, you know, I could have done an Insta story. Here I am with Jesus in the crowd. No, you can't do that then. She had to go and find Jesus. And in a crowd, I hate crowds. I don't know anyone like crowds. No, I didn't think so. And last week in Lourdes, there is a service at night and it is beautiful and it finishes in darkness and all of our sick pilgrims are in the centre and all of the helpers are aside. And there's about 5,000 people at least a night there. And I always hate being on duty for that shift because I have to find them in the crowd. And so I'm there and the torchlight's finished and they release the rope. And all of my team look at me and say, Emma, we've got to find our sick pilgrims. I say, good luck, dear ones. And into the main part we go. And I'm shouting these names and I'm trying to find them. And I get them and we get back. But in a crowd for Jesus, trying to find Jesus in that crowd is no mean feat, especially if you are in pain. You know, it's bad enough finding when you're feeling happy and, you know, you're enjoying being there. But when you are in pain, to try and find somebody who you don't even really know what he looks like, but she has desperation and she has not lost hope. She had courage. She had the courage to overcome her fear of being discovered, for being sick, for being unclean. And she didn't let her fear of being sick and unclean stop her from coming to Jesus because she had hope in healing. And this encounter tells us about her illness. And in Jewish tradition, particularly if we read in Leviticus chapter 15, if you had a complaint to do with blood, you were seen as polluted, unclean. She would have lost her family, her friends, because if they were near her, they would be polluted and unclean. She'd lost her money because she'd spent it all on these cures. But she never gave up hope. And her condition that defined her, that made her isolated and broken and looked down upon, didn't stop her from having hope. And I wonder when we are in life and we are in hopeless situations? Do we still press on? Do we still pursue Jesus? Do we still reach out for him? Do we trust that he will heal us even in our brokenness and our mess? Do we search him out in the busyness of our lives just to touch his presence? And what is amazing in this story and this encounter is that this woman knows that she is polluted. And she had the fear of being discovered. Her condition could have quite easily have shown. And that person, the woman who was unclean, knew that by touching Jesus, she was making him unclean. But the fear of making him unclean did not stop her. And she reached out and touched Jesus. And Jesus knew that he had been touched. Now, this is what I spent a long time in Stansted wondering, because I was like, when you are in the security queue, I hate the security queue with your passport, and I'm there, and there are people touching you, and I hate people touching me in crowds. I hate it. And they breathe on you, and I just worry about germs. So I'm there, and I'm thinking to myself, if I was Jesus in this crowd, people would be touching me and faffing around and, you know, calling my name. And I know they'd touch me, but I wouldn't know what they'd touched me for. Yet Jesus, despite having all these people touching him, turns to his disciples and says, "Who touches me?" And his disciples must have thought, "Oh, for goodness sake, Jesus, I mean, you really are being a bit stupid right now. You know, there are lots of people, they are touching you. Like, it's not a surprise." And Jesus specifically says, "No, someone has touched me." And in that story, that touch is enough. Jesus doesn't even have to know what the woman needs. Her faith that Jesus could heal her was enough for her to be healed. Her faith was enough. And Jesus turns to her and says, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Your faith has saved you." And in the Greek, yes, you can all laugh because you know I hate referring to Greek, but in the Greek, it's physically saved, but also spiritually. Now, we don't know if her illness was a result of some spiritual kind of things at work. Sometimes in the Gospels they are. I don't think it's right for us to assume that when we are told very little about her story. But Jesus says, "You are saved. You are made well." Now, I think about my life, and it is always a little bit chaotic. And in January, I took on a new role at school, which sounded lovely. And I thought, yes, God, this is great. 2018, we're living the dream. And, you know, I got new stationery, got a new name badge, and I drove into school and I led my first department meeting, and it was going really well. And then it started to go a bit wrong. And I'll be honest, I think every day from January till July when I broke up, if I was in school, I'd drive in the morning and be like, "What's in store this morning?" And I'd rabbit on at Jesus, like have a rabbit, like talking a load of rubbish. And he'd very graciously just listen and not say anything. And then by about 8:30, we have a chapel at school and something would have happened. And I'd just go and sit in the chapel and I couldn't say anything. Like this woman, I didn't know what to say. I just had to trust that I had faith that Jesus was not going to let me fail. He wasn't going to let me fall. And he wasn't going to let false allegations or, you know, people's pain that was being put on me, essentially at one point nearly lose my job. But he didn't, because I reached out to him. I had fear, very much fear, but I refused to be controlled by that fear. Like that woman, I refused to allow that fear to take hold. Instead, to reach out. Because like that woman, I had hope in Jesus. Hope that even if I was in the pressures of life, cowering behind my Jesus, only able to reach out and not say anything. I mean, that woman's pain, what she'd experienced, she didn't even have to say anything. Perhaps she couldn't bring herself to say anything because she would then be discovered if she broke down. And I wonder if we allow ourselves in the fear and our pain and our suffering to not say anything and allow our heart to speak to the heart of Jesus. Because there is boldness in brokenness. When we are broken and imperfect, that's where Jesus can do the best business he can in our hearts. Because our guards are down. Our faith, you know, when we are in real need, somehow our faith, though weak, is so strong because we have nothing else to cling to. And this woman was bold in her brokenness. She was bold enough to approach the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, and stretch out her hand. And I wonder what her heart, as she touched that cloak, spoke to Jesus' heart, that he knew what she needed. And I wonder if we ever allow our hearts to speak to Jesus in a way that is free from words or free from our intention or what we think he should do. I'm a great one in telling Jesus what I think he should do. He doesn't often listen, actually, which is slightly annoying. But when I allow my heart to speak to him, I know more of his heart, and I allow his heart to control my life rather than my fear. And when we allow ourselves to reach out to him, to pour out our heart to him, we become like this woman. We might find ourselves in situations where we are not known by name, where we are known by what we do as a job, where we're known by our illness, where we're known by our past, where we're known by our failures, where we're known by our families rather than who we are. But Jesus in a crowd knew this woman and knew her needs. Jesus knows what we need before we ask, because this woman didn't even ask. And I wonder if we took time in our lives to just sit at the feet of Jesus and reach out, and not even, actually, this woman didn't even touch his body. She just touched his cloak. Imagine what would happen in our hearts on that day. So a woman who was unnamed, who was polluted, who was sandwiched into a gospel story which caused a child to be raised from the dead and could have easily been forgotten, actually shows us what it means to face our fear and to seek out Jesus in the most desperate situations, whether that means being faced with embarrassment or humiliation, when we are vulnerable and speak in our hearts to the one who knows our hearts, we are healed. We might not understand it, and I'm sure that woman went away and was like, oh, that went well, but how? Maybe she never understood. We don't know if she went on to be one who followed Jesus. But I wonder what happened when she went back to her family and told them about her touch with Jesus. So I'd invite you to stand, because you've been sitting. And it's what we say, isn't it, at the Five, we stand. It's all very prayerful when you stand. I'll invite the band up, because you can do some mood strumming, because that always helps as well. It's going very well. And I'd invite you to shut your eyes if you feel comfortable. Sometimes people don't, so I'm not going to force you to shut your eyes. And like that woman did, I invite us to reach our hands out to Jesus. And I'll say a prayer, and then at the end, if you feel that you would like to come forward for some of us to pray with you about facing your fear, or to help you, allow you for your heart to speak out to the heart of our God, we'll do that. And if you are thinking to yourself, I've never heard of this crazy Jesus guy that if you just touch his clothes, you'll be healed, well, we'd love to pray with you to know Jesus as well. Father God, we thank you that you are the one who knows our hearts. That we do not even need to say the word, but you heal our soul, you heal our heart, and you heal our bodies. May we be like this woman who was determined, who had great courage, who stood up to find you despite what the world told her she was. Lord, would we open our hearts to you? In this time, would our hearts speak to yours? Where we are broken, Lord, would we be bold? Where we are fearful, would your Spirit revive us and call us into your presence? And Lord, where we have no words to say to you because we know that we will break down and cry, would you hold our hands and would you guide us into a place where we are yours and we would know you? Lead us in your ways, God. Lead us to wholeness. And would our lives speak of the touch of Christ that changes, that transforms, and that restores our souls.